This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Be thankful I don't take it all. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man.
If you drive. Oh yeah, a little bit of the tax man issues. We'll be talking a little bit about Donald Trump's taxes here in a little bit. But good morning. In the meantime, welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am indeed Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy and partner, Big Ed Davis, thank you for being with us on this Monday morning, October 7th. We are going to be talking in a few minutes with Daniel Cox of the American Enterprise Institute. It's on a study into whether or not political differences keep people from talking and socializing. Do you... Have you found you no longer want to speak to some of your buddies because they share an opposite political view from you? Very interesting. So stick around for that. And as the impeachment pot continues to heat up, Republicans want the impeachers to take a vote in Congress and stop dilly-dallying. So we're going to update you with the latest on all of that as well. And is the Supreme Court being intimidated? A couple of Fox News reporters think they are, and we are going to take a look at that, so stand by. And in our Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10, get your pencils out. We will give you America's top 10 most miserable cities, the cities you don't want to go to. So stay tuned for that as well. Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Best haircut in Tampa Bay. Just go to Route 580, Main Street, Dunedin. Go to Overcash Drive. Turn north, and there you are. A great haircut at a great price. Also, remember, you can listen to our program anytime, anytime, if you go to our website, OurFreedomWorks.com. O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. Thank you, Big Eddie. Always sets up our podcast on the website. So very easy for you to know who we're going to have for a guest and what our top 10 is. OurFreedomWorks.com. Well, Donald Trump made a move that is scaring some of his defense people in the administration. He announced, or the White House announced, that Turkey will soon move forward with a planned military operation in northeast Syria. And Trump is going to pull some of the troops out of the Kurdish-led areas to assist. Now, that decision sent shockwaves, apparently, through both the region and in D.C., with U.S. officials saying that top Pentagon officials were completely blindsided by this order to pull back hundreds of U.S. troops in the Kurdish area. This is a move that apparently greenlights the Turkey operation. Now, some people see the move as a betrayal of the Kurds. Now, the Kurds, you know, they've been that ethnic group that's been slapped around in Iraq and in the Mideast for a long time, and they are generally very friendly to the United States. Now, Lindsey Graham, who's been a very ardent supporter of Trump, calls this move by the president an impulsive decision that would undo U.S. gains and give ISIS fighters a second lease on life. Here's what Trump says. The ISIS caliphate has been defeated, and he said, we were supposed to be in Syria for 30 days. That was many years ago. We stayed and got deeper and deeper into battle with no aim in sight. And when I arrived in Washington, ISIS was running rampant. We quickly defeated 100% of the ISIS caliphate, he said. As for the Kurds, he said, the Kurds fought with us, but were paid massive amounts of money and received equipment to do so. They've been fighting Turkey for decades. I held off this fight for almost 2 years, but it's time for us to get out of these ridiculous, endless wars. And he goes on and on and on and on and on. So there you go. Trump said that the U.S. will still be able to crush ISIS again if they threaten America. Very interesting. In the meantime, obviously the impeachment discussions go on. My goodness, it is all-consuming, is it not, in Washington? In the meantime, Donald Trump and his tax returns are back up in the news again. Today, in New York, a U.S. district court said that Trump's taxes can be released, both his personal and corporate taxes, as part of a criminal investigation. This is really political, by the way. Really political. In August, the DA in New York City, Cyrus Vance Jr., had subpoenaed 8 years of Trump's tax returns. And now the district court says that that they can be opened up. In trying to block the production of his returns, Trump's lawyers had said, among other things, that he was immune to the criminal process while in office. Now, Trump's attorneys are going to appeal this. The U.S. District Court for the Southern District is highly partisan. They're Democrats, basically, and they just want to, of course, go after Donald Trump. So we'll see where all of that goes. I don't think in the long run they're going to be able to make his tax returns public. I mean, if they can do that, they can do it to anybody just on a whim, in my opinion. Anyway, let us take our break. When we come back, we will speak with Daniel Cox of the American Enterprise Institute.
You know that gypsy with the gold cap, too. She's got a hat on 34th and Vine, selling little bottles of love potion number 9.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to tantalkhealth.com. That's tantalkhealth.com. Here's to your health and longevity.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Varshu.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets, from animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
All of my love, all of my kissing, you don't know what you've been missing, oh boy.
Oh boy.
When you're
hey, we're back on a Monday morning, October the 7th already, and delighted to have Daniel Cox of the American Enterprise Institute join us. He is a fellow there at the Institute, and he's been involved in a study about the public views of political compromise and conflict. And I find this very interesting, Daniel, because you say, or it is said in this report, that most Americans think that even though we might have strong political differences, it does not stop us overall from agreeing on other topics. Now, these days, it seems like the people that like Trump can barely stand talking with the people that don't like Trump. It's been one of the most divisive issues to come around in a long, long time. So tell us a little bit about this study, if you would.
Sure. Well, this is a new survey from the American Enterprise Institute, and it's part of a new series that we're doing called the American Perspective Survey. And it's really to get a sense, you know, and go beyond the horse race numbers, go beyond the, you know, approval, disapproval, who's up, who's down, and try to get a better understanding of where Americans are on not just important issues, but the, you know, the experiences that really are, that undergird a lot of these basic political opinions, and sort of understand where they're starting from. As you said, there were some really interesting results in this survey. At a time when we're more polarized politically than ever, there were some more optimistic findings, like the one you mentioned, that we found that, you know, not political disagreement does not necessarily preclude agreement on other topics. But then we had about half of respondents saying, politics is about good versus evil, right? That's what it is. And so it may just be that's, you know, folks don't really like politics. But one of the really interesting things for me from the survey was how our political misperceptions of just who Democrats and who Republicans are can be driving some of this as well. So we asked a series of questions about what percentage of Democrats are, and we gave them particular identities, white, under the age of 30, atheist or agnostic or liberal. And we had a similar battery for Republicans. How many Republicans are evangelical Christian, white, 65 years or older, or conservative? And on a number of these traits, the partisans are way off. So I'll give you an example. When it comes to the percentage of Democrats that are atheists or agnostics, 42% of Republicans said that Democrats are atheists or agnostic. But the actual number of Democrats who are is only 12%.
12.
So 12.
They're way off.
And funny thing, Democrats are off as well. Democrats say 29% of Democrats are atheists or agnostic. So they're off by a factor of more than two. So there's a lot of misperceptions out there, and I think it leads us to believe that the other party is just is more different than they actually are in a lot of these things.
Yeah.
Cases.
Well, I mean, I really believe that if you sit down at a dinner table with people that you don't know, and you don't know whether, you know, what their political implications are, you're very reluctant to talk politics, you know, these days, particularly. And I felt it. I feel the tension even in my own family politically. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to broach the subject. So are you saying in a way that people knowing that will just not talk talk politics to some extent and get along with people, you know, for other reasons? Or what exactly are we doing these days, you know, in the Trump era?
Yeah, and I think we are. This is uncharted territory in some respects. So there's, a tendency for us always to believe this sort of new era, this new time we're in is somehow very distinct, and a lot of times it's not that different. But I do think in the case of Trump and, you know, what we're seeing in terms of polarization, there's some new things going on, and I'll talk about just a couple. I was on a panel last week on looking at political polarization, and one of the things that we're seeing, and this is a little bit beyond this study, but it's relevant, is that in the dating world, politics, and Trump in particular, is coming up more and more.
Yeah, I bet
so
it is.
40% of new couples have met online, which makes it the most common way for new couples to meet these days. And places like OkCupid surveyed their members and found that three-quarters of their members said that supporting Trump is a deal-breaker for them.
Three-quarters of the members?
Three-quarters.
75% say that one way or the other, Trump's a deal-breaker?
Yeah, so supporting Trump is a deal-breaker.
Oh, supporting him.
Yeah, so remember that these dating sites, they are disproportionately young. Younger folks are less inclined to support Trump. And we see huge gender gaps where,
wow,
Trump is a much more of an issue for young women than for young men. And then another site, wow, eHarmony, they found that between 2016 and 2017, three times as many people put political information into their profiles, meaning that they wanted to sort on politics, which they weren't doing the year before, before Trump was elected. So we are seeing this a little bit, and this is why we're really interested in this study, to sort of get a sense of, how do we view the other party, and are there places where we could even come together? And some of my work and the work that we're going to be doing here is going to try to figure that out.
We're talking with Daniel Cox, a research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. He's involved in a study. And by the way, you can go to the American Enterprise Institute website to look at some of it. But public views of political compromise and conflict and partisan misperceptions. Yeah, I mean, this is, going back to presidents before this, and I go back a long way to a lot of presidents, I've never seen anything like it where the topic of politics can be so dividing. Did you get a sense, Daniel, that people are more volatile overall because of regarding especially national politics? Are there is there more volatility in them? Do you know what I mean? They would get upset quicker if they started talking about it, or is it? Do you think it's? Do you sense that it's about the same?
No, I think, and one of the things that's happened too is that in our local communities, with the decline of local news, local newspapers paying attention to local issues, everything's become nationalized. So instead of talking about local disagreements where it's not right versus left, it may be this part of the neighborhood versus that part of the neighborhood or whatever, maybe even that there's not that much disagreement. We're talking about abortion and LGBT issues and economic policy or all these other issues or immigration, where these places where the national debate sorts us neatly into left and right, conservative, liberal, Democrat, Republican. Point of fact, like when we talk to each other in our communities, that's not how we see the world mostly. When I talk to my neighbors, I talk to my, my kids' school teachers. I don't see them as Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal. It's only when we get to the national, the sort of nationalized news coverage and national focus of politics that we then sort of put on those glasses.
You mentioned in the study, and I think you touched on it here in our talk, that both Democrats and Republicans want what is best for the country, but they also see some good and evil in taking certain positions. Did I pick up on that?
Yeah, so this is the more dispiriting part of the study, where that there's these two questions that we looked at. One is, do Republicans and Democrats want what's best for the country? We said that, even if they disagree on the issues, are they both trying to make the country a better place? And this was a little depressing. Only half of the public agrees. So, again, we stated in the question, we understand
half,
that Democrats and Republicans...
Only half agree?
Both Democrats and Republicans are fighting
really?
For the same thing.
And
to make America... Yeah, to make America a better place.
Uh-oh.
Democrats were slightly more likely to agree with that than Republicans, but half the country disagrees with that. And that was just kind of like... Whoa, things have definitely gotten off the rails a little bit.
Yeah, it gives me the impression that people out in the country think that they're up to no good. You know, if half of them think they don't want to do what's best for the country, there was a time when we really thought, hey, you know, I might not like the guy, but I think he's doing what his conscience is telling him is the right thing to do for the country. And now we're saying, whoa, no, they're doing what's right for themselves, maybe to enrich themselves or to get somebody else kicked out of office. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, so that was definitely among the more dispiriting. One of the real interesting things that we haven't chatted about yet was that we asked this question about where do you most disagree with your party? So if you're Republican, where do you on what issue do you most disagree with the GOP? If you're Democrat, on what issue do you most disagree with the Democratic Party? And for Republicans, one issue really stood out. Climate change is the issue that they mentioned most often as disagreeing with the GOP. We found that, in fact, roughly one in four Republican-leaning independents say climate change is the issue they most disagree with the GOP on. On the Democratic side, two issues were mentioned more than others, and that is taxes and spending and gun control. Those are the issues that Democrats.
Republicans look at climate change as a big disagreeing factor.
Yeah, with their own party. And then for Democrats, the place they most disagree with their own party is taxes and spending and gun control.
Gun control. What about, did you find anything about immigration? I would think that that really is separating people these days, illegal immigration on the border. Is there a big rift, really, in or is it just, let's say, the far left of the Democratic Party believes in kind of keeping the borders open to some extent, and maybe more moderate Democrats do not, so it's not as big of a Republican-Democrat issue, or anything on that at all?
Yeah, we didn't see we asked immigration was one of the issues that we asked about, and we didn't see it really come up very much for many people. And I think for the Democratic Party, you know, kind of the mainstream position of, you know, comprehensive immigration reform has been very popular among rank and file Democrats, and even a large share of Republicans for quite some time. And then you've had sort of a fringe of the Democratic Party that's been calling for abolishing ICE and these other things that are much more controversial within the Democratic Party, also nationally as well. So, but in terms of like the main mainstream kind of Democratic position, that's largely popular among the public in terms of like a organized reform of the immigration system.
Mm-hmm.
We're not seeing that come up. Although. Trump has really changed the debate in terms of the priorities of immigration. So we found that before, not in this study, but in another study that I conducted, that before Trump was elected, only about half of Republicans said immigration was a priority issue. In 2019, it's approaching three-quarters.
Three-quarters, wow. I would think it's going to be a huge issue, actually, in the presidential election, a huge one, maybe more than most people think. Daniel, real pleasure to talk with you today. I know you're continuing this study, and we'd certainly like to have you back down the road, maybe to talk further about the perception among the public with politics. Thank you so much, Daniel.
My pleasure.
All right. Daniel Cox, American Enterprise Institute. Let us take our break. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court and whether or not it's being intimidated.
Mustang Sally, guess you better slow than Mustang down.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Let's go bowling!
Let's Go Bowling, heard on the Tan Talk Radio Network every Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern Time. Sponsored by 12 Strike and Innovative Ball Spinner. If you bowl, if you haven't bowled in a while, or if you never bowled, Why not you be one of 65 million people have bowled last year? Listen to the tip of the week. Bowling stars, old and new. Let's Go Bowling Show. GoBowlingShow.com.
Hello there, Tampa Bay. This is former NFL and college football coach Jimmy Johnson. Listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can sure use the attention.
And this is former Major League Baseball player, Hall of Famer Wade Boggs. I also hope you listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can darn sure use the money.
Hi there. This is marine wildlife artist and conservationist Dr. Guy Harvey. Please listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They need to feel worthy.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Thank you for being with us here on Freedom Works. By the way, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Set your watches. We want you with us. Okay. Well, on to the impeachment issue. House Democrats believe they got the votes to pass impeachment articles against Trump. That, according to a senior member of the House Democratic Caucus. He was on Fox News yesterday and said it's unlikely House Speaker Pelosi will give in to the president's demand for an inquiry vote. Why don't they just take the vote? You see, here's the thing. If you just want to continue to throw darts at Trump without his being able to basically have his day in court, just, you know, don't make the vote. Because once you make the vote and you vote for an impeachment, then it's like a trial, and then you get to bring in witnesses, and then, you know, the real thing goes on. But there is a source in the Democratic Party that says they do have enough votes. They haven't done an official nose count, but they believe that the numbers were based on the 227 votes already on record for the inquiry. When asked what could stop this process, this unnamed source that says they have the votes said it's unclear, but that the caucus could not rule out the idea of cold feet among some Democrats. I think that's very true. So let us do this. Let's get some opinions of some of the people out there. We've got Angelo Ceresi, brother of the Master Barber, up in New York. And Angelo, the impeachment battle continues on. Do you feel that the Democrats in the House should go ahead if they're going to do the impeachment and impeach or continue to kind of dawdle like they're doing?
Well, they're dawdling because they don't want to take the votes.
That's because what it sounds like.
If they take the votes, then there'll be a trial, and then all the dirt about them will come out.
Mm-hmm.
And the Democrats who are in the districts that the president won back in 2016 are going to fear for their jobs. You know, and that's what they want.
Yeah.
She's protecting them.
You talk about Ms. Pelosi.
Pelosi, yes, the Speaker of the House.
So she's.
I mean, all they keep doing is, you know, they're dangling that carrot. You know, and then if it gets to the Senate, it's never going to pass anyway because it's controlled by the Republicans. McConnell will just say, "Okay, that's it. We're done. The thing is done. It's over with."
Yeah. Well, they would need 2/3 in the Senate, and certainly the Democrats don't even have the majority there. But listen to this, Angelo. Lindsey Graham, who's been a buddy, of course, of President Trump,
mm-hmm.
vows to expose the whistleblowers, plural, there's two of them, I think, right now, against Trump in this Ukraine phone call, if the Democrats move forward with impeachment. Now, the whistleblowers, right now, one of them has second or third hand information, admittedly so. But,
right.
But they are protected. They don't. But if you do have an impeachment inquiry, Trump is.
Then they would have to be exposed.
Gets to face his accusers, correct? He
right.
gets to face
Absolutely.
His accusers. So they can bring those people into the impeachment trial.
Right.
And but here's Graham said, I will expose the anonymous whistleblowers if the Democrats move forward with an impeachment vote. Now, says here that a second whistleblower was confirmed yesterday morning, and he or she reportedly has firsthand info. But I get the impression that this is also a Trump hater.
It's got to be the same thing like Christine Blasey Ford with Kavanaugh and all these other people that came forward. It's the same scenario that they tried to do with Justice Kavanaugh at his hearings last year.
It seemed like there's the same venom that comes out.
Right. That's all that it is.
With Trump as it was. I mean, they had the same venomous hate, it sounded like, for Kavanaugh, who, by all reports, you know, he has the his demeanor is the polar opposite of Trump. And, you know, he's a good family man and all of those things. But yet they went after him like he was the devil incarnate. And I'm getting the impression that the Democrats, you know, it's not, it has nothing to do with their personalities. It has to do with their it's all political, absolutely political.
All they want, they did not want Kavanaugh in there because he's conservative. They can't stand Trump because he's a conservative, and he's in their way. It's all politics. That's all that it is. Every bit of it is just politics.
We're talking.
And I don't know. I mean,
yeah. Go ahead.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. If a president is like impeachment inquiry and everything like that. Say something happened to what's her name there, the one that's been battling cancer, Ginsburg, Justice Ginsburg.
Oh yes, uh huh.
Supposing something happens to her now, and the seat is vacant, will this stop the president from appointing another Supreme Court justice? I mean, are they using stalling tactics also?
Yeah. Well, no matter what, they would try to stop Trump from making any appointment.
They would do anything.
They'll use all kinds of defenses against it. Well, you didn't allow Merrick Garland to get a vote. Republicans.
Same scenario, right?
So we're not. We don't think that. Well, the thing is that Mitch McConnell is the head of the Senate. That's where the vote is taken on a Supreme Court judge. Mm-hmm. And McConnell determines whether or not the vote will be taken. So just from a political standpoint, Trump would be able to make a nomination. And no matter what the screaming and hollering would be about, I would think that the Senate Republicans on a simple majority vote would probably be able to get that nominee through.
But, you know, the thing is, like with this whistleblower, it's the same scenario that they're using, you know? It's in their playbook. I mean, you know, and the president, also being a U.S. citizen, has the right to confront his accusers.
Oh, yeah.
So she should have a vote and get it going and let the chips fall where they may.
So do you believe that there should be an impeachment vote and away we go?
If the president's calling for it, he knows what's right. His advisors are, I'll go along with whatever they want to do. Have the vote. Put it on record. And this way he can confront his accusers. And see how corrupt that they really are.
Yeah, it's probably going to polarize this country even a little more than it is, if that's possible. But if it works out like it did with Bill Clinton, people begin, even those that maybe aren't great lovers of Donald Trump for whatever reason, America is not that dumb. They understand when someone's being
railroaded
and stomped on,
and I
think don't like that.
All of America knows what's going on, and I just can't foresee the American people tolerating this that much longer.
Right?
Really? I mean, they're not accomplishing anything, nothing for this country.
Yeah, it's
all they
want
to do is destroy this person like they tried to destroy Justice Kavanaugh. They've been doing this since the day when he announced that he was going to be elected. But some of the Democrats, like in the Democratic National Committee, he had won, right?
Yeah.
He had won. If he wins, they're going to start impeachment proceedings.
Wow.
This is when he announced that he was going to run for president.
Yep, exactly. They had their sights set. You're absolutely right.
Am I right or wrong? And this is going on from the time he announced that he was a candidate. And this has been their playbook all along.
Right.
And if the American people can't see that, I don't know what else to tell you.
Yeah, no, you're making a good point. Angelo, it's always a pleasure. Thank you, sir, for calling in.
You're quite welcome.
And I'm hoping we'll talk with you again next week.
Absolutely.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Angelo Ceresi, the brother. You remember the Smothers Brothers, Ed? Tom and Dick Smothers. Do you remember them by
name? Yeah, they always did commercials or something. Mom
they did. They did commercials, and they actually had a show, and they were a comedy team, but they played music, and you know, they were kind of folk singers, but more comedians. So we've got, this is the latest installment of the Smothers Brothers, the Ceresi Brothers. All right. I want to talk real briefly, next couple of minutes, about a story I saw that kind of sent a little chill up my spine. It has to do with whether or not the Supreme Court is being intimidated. And these two reporters for Fox News, Carrie Severino and Gail Trotter, wrote this piece, and they say, as the Supreme Court begins its new term, which, by the way, is coming up, it does so in the face of unprecedented political pressure and threats to its independence. Democratic presidential candidates continue to push court-packing ideas, proposals. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island, a Democrat, recently filed a friend of the court brief in a case containing the ominous words, quote, "Perhaps the court can heal itself before the public demands it be restructured in order to reduce the influence of politics," unquote. As in, if you don't get your act together, maybe we'll break you up. We'll change you. So the question is, according to these two reporters, how will the High Court respond this term to the barrage of intimidation tactics? The court this term will be considering some really important issues, a host of critical legal questions. Among the first three Title VII cases, there's one called Bostock versus Clayton County in Georgia. There's another one called Altitude Express versus Zarda. And the third one, Harris Funeral Home versus Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The court will consider whether the prohibition against employment discrimination because of sex in Title VII of the Civil Rights Act includes discrimination based on one's sexual orientation. So we're getting into the gay area and whether or not if you are gay or transgender, whether or not you can be hired or fired. After Obama's Equal Opportunity Commission decided to reinterpret that 64 Civil Rights Act to include include gay people, basically, some courts of appeals followed along. But as the late Justice Antonin Scalia on the Supreme Court once wrote, "Congress does not hide elephants in mouse holes," said this case will be a bellwether as to the court's commitment to adhering to what is clearly the longstanding meaning of civil rights. Another case that's attracting media attention has to do with gun control, New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus City of New York. This apparently is the most significant Second Amendment case since that Heller case versus the District of Columbia, whether or not you could carry a handgun in D.C. While Heller affirmed that you could, the court will now consider whether it protects an individual's rights to carry a firearm beyond your house. Can you take your gun, get in the car, and drive down to the grocery store, for instance? Or must you keep the gun in your house? I would think it would be quite an imposition on your liberty if they said you can only keep your gun in your house. I don't know where they would go with that. But very interesting. And so anyway, just the crux of it is there's going to be a lot of pressure on the Supreme Court. Remember, they've never forgiven the Republicans for putting Justice Kavanaugh on the court. They're still going after Justice Kavanaugh. Okay, let us take our break. When we come back, we're going to tell you the top 10 most miserable cities to live in. We're also going to talk with our sports guru, Big Ed, about a couple of sports going on here in Tampa Bay.
Just a jackknife has old Maggie Heath, babe, and it keeps it out of sight.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Hi there, I'm Dr. John.
And I'm Dr. Lisa.
You have medical questions you never get to ask?
Now you can ask us.
After many years of caring for children and families, we've learned that the best informed families are also the healthiest.
Are you saying knowledge is power, Dr. John?
I am, Dr. Lisa, and since you're the smart one, I hope you'll share some knowledge with me and our listeners.
Let's do this then.
Okay, we hope you'll join us every Monday at noon right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for the Drs. John and Lisa Show.
Listen online at tantalk1340.com.
Hello, Americans. My name is Bill Cochran, and my live radio show, Only in America, is on Tantalk every Tuesday evening between 6 and 7. MyPillow helps sponsor my show. The buy one premium MyPillow and get one premium MyPillow absolutely free deal is back just in time for Christmas. The pillow comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Call 800-954-9168 or order online at MyPillow.com. Use promo code Bill. For the buy one, get one free offer, 800-954-9168 or online, promo code Bill.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back. And we're going to take the rest of our show here for you sports enthusiasts before we do our top 10 to talk with our sports expert here, Big Ed, who goes to all of our local games as much as possible. And, Ed, we got three teams here in Tampa Bay that are currently in action, and all three of them played over the weekend, but it hasn't been good. It hasn't been good. The Bucs, our Tampa Bay Buccaneers football team, went down to defeat with New Orleans. We had our Lightning lose in overtime yesterday in Carolina, and our Rays are down 0-2 to Houston. I want to start with that because we got a game this afternoon here with the Rays hosting Houston, and it's best of five, and we're already down two games. We have to win three in a row. What's going to go on here? What do you think?
Well, it's been a long weekend because it actually started on Friday. After the show that, you know, they went on and they lost, and then everybody thought, well, they'll come back Saturday, and they lost. And I think sometimes teams start to change things when they get in the playoffs. Instead of doing the same things that they did to win 96 games during the year, stop being cute, stealing bases, swinging for Dallas instead of just hitting the ball and getting the ball into play.
So they're over fighting,
yes,
or whatever you call it.
Yeah, they're fighting too hard.
Fighting too hard, okay.
So now it comes back. It's done. So now it comes back to the Trop, and we talked on Friday, will they open up the Trop bigger? So we got 34,000 packed in there this afternoon at 1 o'clock.
Do we?
Yes, and then Stu Money Man said that if this goes to another series, he'll take the rest of the tarps off and get it up to 40. So
they have definitely sold enough tickets to make 34,000.
Yeah, it sold out both games if necessary. Excellent. The next game if necessary.
Maybe that'll be a little bit of a boost for the.
I hope so, because they're
not used to having large crowds.
I'm tired of getting swept in playoffs. You know, starting with the Lightning, which is a good segue into the Lightning.
Oh, well, let's do that.
What's going on with the Lightning here? When the captain in what is this, the fourth game? Third game.
Third game.
Comes out and says, we got problems. In the third game, we've got problems. Too much of we're skilled and we could just go out and win instead of fighting for the win.
Now, the captain is Stamkos?
Yes.
So Stamkos, who's been around on the team for a long time mm-hmm. and can sense what's going on, I'm sure better than, as good as anybody.
I'm telling you, I've said this for years. John Cooper, the head coach, I'm not a fan of his, and I don't think Stamkos is a fan of his either.
Really?
I really think there's something going on there. And, you know, he just got a contract a couple of years ago, a new one. So last year they couldn't get rid of him but because of the sweep in the playoffs. But when you have that much talent and you can't put it all together and get deep in the playoffs, and obviously somebody that's putting the talent together and running the talent, managing the talent, it's probably a better word, managing the talent is not doing their job.
Okay, so I watched the Lightning. I remember, of course, for those of you that don't follow it, the Lightning had the best record in hockey last mm-hmm. year, and they lost four straight games in the very first round to Columbus, and everybody was shocked. We're still getting over it.
That's what I mean about it. I'm trying to get swept getting in the playoffs. It. Yeah, yeah.
So now we started out, and we won our first game against Florida.
Right.
Then we went down to here in Tampa. Mm-hmm. Then we went down to Florida, and we lost that game. Then we went to Carolina. We're on, I think, a bit of a road tour. The Lightning.
No, I think we tied that game down there, didn't we?
What did we tie it?
We're 1-1 right now.
Oh, okay. So
we have a tie in there somewhere.
Well, we got a point because we went into overtime against Carolina.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I'm sorry. That's right.
So I think we've actually lost two games, but we get a point for the overtime loss.
Right. Right.
But I'm seeing what you're seeing. I'm a little worried about there's something there. I mean, they got all the talent.
Yeah.
I think they probably have the best goalie in the NHL, or at least people keep saying that.
Well, here Stamkos came out and said,
what?
You know, that I feel sorry for our goalie because we have a great goalie, but there's certain things like on defense that this kind of a system is not particularly working correctly.
Oh, so and that's an what allusion I mean. To the coach.
Whoever's coming up with this system and managing the players that are on the ice and whatnot, that's the part that I believe that the rift is there somewhere.
Wow. Okay, I want to get over to the Bucks. They played so well against Los Angeles a week ago Sunday that I thought, wow, they go to Los Angeles, they play the Rams. The Rams are figured to be one of the playoff teams this year. And then they go to and they won that rather handily. Now they go to the New Orleans Saints, which is a good team, but they got their backup. They don't have Drew Brees throwing the ball. And they lose 31-24. Now, what's going on there?
Well, a couple of things. I don't usually say this, but it's not an excuse, but it is a problem. Officiating this year is horrible.
Is it?
There were some things yesterday that were just
But you can challenge
horrible.
Bad calls.
When it goes to New York, they just send it off to New York. And you can clearly see that the receiver pushes off because when he pushes, the defender moves backwards. That's called a push-off. That's called offensive pass interference. Oh. That went to New York and came back as nothing.
I don't recall that play, but I see what you mean. Yeah.
There's a fumble, and you say, his momentum was stopped or whatever. But the calls are just horrible. The other part is inconsistency. But there's some good things. First with the bad things. But the bad things... How does Mike Evans not get a catch yesterday? Chris Godwin had...
Evans is one of the Bucs receivers.
Chris Godwin had another good game, number 12, or another wide receiver. But somehow he's not getting... It's just Jameis is holding on to the ball too long. He got sacked 6 times again yesterday.
Wow.
That's indecisiveness. You can't second guess and be afraid to throw the pick. See it, feel it, throw it. And then just get it. Listen, when you do a 3 or a 5-step drop, you can't stand there for 3 seconds shuffling your feet, looking around the field for somebody to throw it to. It's 1, 2, 3, boom. That's all you've got in a 3-step drop or a 5-step drop. It's got to be quick.
Yeah.
But you can't be indecisive in this thing. But there were some good things yesterday. The running game was there. The running game was there, and I think hopefully they'll build on that because now they go to England and they're going to play the Panthers in England.
There's a game in England every week.
Yeah, well, that's the NFL's way of shoving it down their throat.
They are.
It is.
I wonder if England will ever...
I think there's four games this year.
Well, the Bears just played it here.
Did you happen to see it?
No.
They built them a brand new stadium in England.
Oh. Well, they got to play then. You know, they got to have something to do, right? Okay. Thank you very much, Ed. It is time for you to get over on the drums because we got the top 10 most miserable cities to live in. And we always ask Ed what number one is when we get to it. But this is from Business Insider, and they actually came up with the 50 most miserable cities. They used census data. They looked at 1,000 cities, and they took into consideration population change, in other words, if people are leaving, percentage of people working, median household income, percentage of people without health care, median commute times, and number of people living in poverty. Okay, so that's what we're going to use for the top 10 most miserable cities to live in. Here we go. Number 10, Huntington Park, California. Apparently large enough to be considered and lousy enough to make the list. All right, number 9, Warren, Ohio. Wow, okay. Number 8, Camden, New Jersey. Ever been to Camden, New Jersey yet?
Not even at gunpoint.
Okay, good. Number 7, where the water ain't too good sometimes, Flint, Michigan. Mm-hmm. Flint, Michigan is number 7. Number 6, and this is the only, no, I won't say that. Let me just say that this is interested me. Pine Bluff, Arkansas, for some reason. Pine Bluff, Arkansas.
Could be the poverty. Pushes it up.
That's where my bank is, by the way. Seriously, my credit card bank. I wonder, maybe I should change. Number 5, Newark, New Jersey. Isn't Cory Booker the former mayor of Newark, New Jersey? He left it in shambles, apparently. Number 4, hey, right down the street, Passaic, New Jersey. Hey, what's going on with New Jersey?
Stay out.
That's the third one. Camden, Passaic, and Newark. The New Jersey ain't doing too well right here. Number 3. And so far, this is the largest city on the list. Detroit.
Mm.
The Motor City.
I thought they were big.
It was Motown. What's going on here?
Yeah, but I thought there were big things for Detroit. It was coming back. They're rebuilding and stuff.
Well, they
like
haven't
that.
Quite got there yet, yeah. Maybe. All right, number 2. Port Arthur, Texas. Now, that's where a lot of oil refinery is going on. It's not far from Houston and all that kind of thing.
I've seen that.
Have you seen that before?
I've gone through Port Arthur.
Have you?
Yes, I have.
Okay, and what is the number one most miserable city to live in?
I'm going to say Chicago.
How dare you say Chicago? And you know I come from Chicago. Gary, Indiana.
Indiana.
And that's not, really? That's not far from Chicago. Yeah. Gary is a huge, you know, was a huge steel city.
Uh-huh.
And it's right along the very northwestern corner of the Hoosier State, and it's close to Chicago.
Yeah, it's got to be poverty or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Pushing it down.
Lots of poverty. All right, my friends, thank you so very much. We will be back on Wednesday, and remember, always remember, freedom works.